Coming up on the show today, Sally and I continue our book review of Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds. Chapter this week talks about story and using the art of storytelling in your presentations. You're not going to want to miss that. Plus our picks, a ton of listener feedback, and much, much more. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 266 for December 11th, 2012. My name is Martin Spriggs, and you're listening to a show that focuses on technology, yes, but ministry as well, and where those two intersect. And joining me, as usual, from snowy, maybe chilly, sleepy eye, Minnesota. Morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and happy 2 weeks till Christmas Day. Can't
That's right.
believe it's only 2 weeks away.
Countdown begins.
You got a little taste of Christmas this weekend, I understand.
I was up in your neck of the woods, and I told you last week to keep the snow away, and you said, it should be fine. And
yeah.
Lo and behold, it took me basically all day Sunday to get home.
Love those
snow,
blizzards, huh?
Through the snow and the wind, and we had a little breakdown in Rochester. And, but we made it home safe and sound, and it was great to see our daughter and listen to a beautiful concert. Hopefully some of our listeners were able to tune in via the streaming that we talked about last week.
Yep, I heard from one friend of mine who said she watched both concerts, not one, but two MLC Christmas concerts. So.
Yeah. That's neat. I think the neatest part, other than seeing our daughter, of course, was the chapel, and the acoustics in that chapel for a concert like that are just so, so much better than doing it in the gym or any place else. Just a beautiful experience.
Awesome. Well, definitely get you in the mood for the wonderful joy that we experience at Christmas time. And hopefully our listeners are making all their preparations for Christmas, and it's going to be a great, great celebration. So
absolutely.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, we are at the point in the month where we focus on a book, and we're in chapter 4 of our book that we're reviewing, Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds. And the chapter title for this book is Crafting the Story. And very fitting as we're in this season of the story, right, Sally, where we're hearing that such great news. And a big part of this book is trying to get across to your listeners the big idea. And one of the best ways to do that is through the use of crafting a story.
Right. It's kind of interesting to think of yourself as a storyteller. I do a lot of different presentations and training things, and ultimately I want to lead my participants down a path and you know, end with the climax of the story, and hopefully they walk away with some new knowledge from what I'm sharing. So I think it's a really good way to think of it. We have listeners who are reading along with us. I know a couple have commented on our Facebook page. We got an email this week from missionary Paul Nitz, who's over in Malawi, Africa. And he actually was thinking presentations in when he came across a blog post called Beyond PowerPoint. And it was kind of a recap of some of the information that was shared at a recent conference, the Visual Learning Conference held this fall at Carleton College. And a really interesting recap. They talked about three techniques that you can use to kind of break those PowerPoint chains. And that includes Picha-Kucha. Martin, are you familiar with that technique?
Yep. There's a website too, Picha-Kucha. It's PECHA-KUCHA.org. And this is kind of a fairly new concept, and there have been a number of these kinds of things that have been tried over the years. This one kind of caught on, and I think is pretty popular at this point. It's basically a presentation approach where the presenter has a limit of 20 slides, and basically they have to be images. There can be minimal text, and they prefer no text at all. But not only 20 images, but you have 20 seconds per slide. So the challenge is to get the big idea across in 20 images, 20 seconds per slide. So you can do the math, and it's a very short, you know, presentation. You're getting a lot across in a very short period of time, but you have to pick your slides carefully. And in that time, you have to tell a story. So that's the whole point of this kind of thing, where you've got kind of an introduction, you know, the body, and then a conclusion, and then at the end of the time, then hopefully the listener, the viewer, has the big idea based on this 2020 concept, this Picha Kucha.
Sounds interesting. Maybe we'll have to do a challenge and see if we can do that. I don't know how well I'd fare, 20 slides and 20 seconds each, but interesting concept. And the storytelling obviously has to come through with those images that you're selecting being very, very important. Mm-hmm. Other things mentioned in this particular blog post include using Prezi, which is another presentation software, web-based software that's got a different feel to it than the linear PowerPoint bullets kind of concept. And then they make mention of Scott McCloud, who's the author of several comic-oriented books, but has a lot to say about visual storytelling.
Right.
And Scott was the keynoter at the conference, and there's a separate blog post that gets into a lot of information about the information he shared. Very, very interesting. He has a TED Talk out there and everything about visual design. And so, excellent tie-in to our podcast this week, Missionary Knits. We really appreciate the email.
Yeah, the visuals, and you mentioned, you know, the comic book approach. When you think about a comic strip, it is certainly a story with pictures and not a lot of text usually, and that's really a tenet of a good presentation, where you're using images to enhance, you know, what you're saying, but you're not throwing a lot of, you know, text, you know, on the screen for somebody to have to read through and then also listen to you and then look at images. It's just too much. So simpler is better.
Right. All right. So getting to this chapter 4 of our book, I think one of the big things that comes out right off the bat is an acronym. It's SUCCESS, that mm-hmm. you need to plan for success. And there are, 6 key concepts around that success.
Even though there's 7 letters in success, we dropped the last S just for the sake of making it an actual word. And I talk through this with the Dynamic Classroom Presentations class that I teach for MLC. We actually use this book as a textbook, as I mentioned in the past. And this concept of success is really core to how you understand the whole presentation Zen approach. So let's go through each letter, Sally. So the S in success is, like we talked about earlier here, simplicity. If everything is important, then nothing is important. So what's the key point? Why does it matter? What's the big idea? You know, just keep it simple. So if you're tempted to kind of throw everything on that slide just so that you've got it in front of your students, then resist that temptation. Try and strip it down to, you know, just very key points and keep it very simple. One word, two words, you know, or no words potentially, but use the power of the picture.
Absolutely. Next up, the U is for unexpectedness, and he encourages you to surprise people. I like the way he described it in the book. He said to make them aware of the gap in their knowledge, because mm-hmm. a lot of times people don't know what they don't know. And so presenting, in a way that they become intrigued and want to fill that gap in their knowledge, I think is a great way to think of it.
Yep. Make them a little thirsty, cause them to say, well, I didn't know that, or I never thought of it that way is maybe mm-hmm. even the best approach, so mm-hmm. that you're providing some value versus just something that, you know, they probably knew already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next is C, concreteness. So this is a real challenge for especially those dealing with maybe theological topics. So you're talking about things that maybe aren't as concrete. You read through some Bible passages, and Paul, let's say, does a very good job at this, using illustrations to bring something that's maybe a little bit abstract into the concrete. So making sure that you're making things real and not leaving things in the abstract, just kind of thoughts, but saying, well, how does this apply, or what does this mean, or what does this really say, is a real important part of a good presentation.
One more C in success is for credibility. And they talk about using stats and backup information to your advantage. You need to, you know, have information that supports what you're saying, but not just boring charts and lots of numbers on the screen. Instead, mm-hmm. putting it in terms that people can understand. And I had to smile when I read this because I just helped my freshman, ninth grade son work on a presentation on the, he was supposed to sell the qualities of uranium in his chemistry class. So he had uranium as his assignment. Yeah. And of course he was thinking about the bombs that were famous from World War II and things. And the amount of uranium in what they called Little Boy, the first bomb that dropped on Hiroshima, was about 140 pounds. So instead of saying 140 pounds, he said it was about as much as me holding my mid-sized dog, you know, so he had a picture for the kids to understand how much uranium was in there. Mm-hmm. And then the amount that actually detonated the bomb was only so many grams. It was tiny, what actually reached fission or whatever. And he held up a pencil eraser, you know, to kind of illustrate that, you know, it weighed this much, but this is all that it took to set off that bomb. Right. And so, you know, adding some credibility, having those stats, but then presenting them in a visual way that people can relate to.
Yeah, he was combining those two C's, concreteness and credibility.
There you go.
Yep, absolutely.
Didn't even know it.
Yeah, cool. The E in success is emotions. Make them feel something. And that's really an encouragement to use imagery, because pictures can help create emotion. Also stories. So using those two together, you want to create emotions. People remember things when they're touched, not just with their head, but their hearts, obviously. So, and again, this applies not just to classroom presentations, but from the pulpit and Bible class and, you know, in whatever circumstance where you're presenting to people, you know, you want to obviously touch the emotion somehow.
And then you kind of tipped your hat with that last one. The last S is stories,
right?
Just like you mentioned, and just giving examples and illustrations, getting their attention and making things easier to remember with a story that kind of sticks in the brain.
Yep. And there's a reason that stories are told and retold and passed from generation to generation, because first of all, they're interesting, but also they're easier to remember than just a list of facts or figures. If it's in the form of a story, that's something that can be repeated and remembered and then shared. So that's the success approach with presentations. And but there are a few other things that Gar talks about in this, some storytelling principles, and these are cross, you know, not just presentations. Anytime you're telling a story, these are kind of things that writers might use in their work, and even when you're just writing, let's say, a newsletter article, some of these things apply. So identify the problem, identify causes of the problem, and show how and why you solve the problem. So that's a pretty common formula for storytelling.
Right. You know, everybody has the internet at their disposal, and so they can look up facts and they can, you know, get the statistics and things like that if they want to dig deep enough or whatever. So your job isn't to just give them the internet information. It's more to tell a story, to intrigue them, to stimulate them thinking and going further with what you're presenting.
Mm-hmm. And Sally, probably one of the biggest parts of this chapter, at least for me, something that resonated specifically with me, is the whole section on brainstorming or storyboarding. Mm-hmm. Take the time to think about what you're doing as opposed to just diving right in, or maybe even starting with that outline. You know, here's my introduction. Here's the next slide. Here's the next slide. Here's the next slide. Do kind of big picture brainstorming. Think about all of the topics. And he talks about doing this in an analog way. We talked about that, I think, even last week or last month when we talked about that chapter that was devoted to going analog. But creating a storyboard of your ideas is a great idea. So the ability to, whether that be in kind of paper and pencil, or even using tools. And Sally, you've got a couple resources there. One of them is just a storyboard template site.
Right. This is a link I want to include in the show notes. It's called printablepaper.net, and they have a whole category dedicated to storyboard templates. Boy, tongue-tied this morning. Mm-hmm. But yeah, great website. You can go there and basically download a printable sheet of paper with grid lines of a variety of ways. And these storyboard templates come in all different flavors. And so basically they're giving you an area to kind of sketch out what you're going to do, and then an area to describe it in words or whatever. And yep. So these are great templates, and the site itself is probably one worth bookmarking. So yep. Kind of speaks to that paper and pencil version, at least.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Many of us use mind maps for the same kind of thing. And we've actually dedicated a couple of past Wells Tech episodes to the concept of mind mapping. So we'll include links to those in the show notes as well.
Yep. And another concept that's brought out in the book is if you like to use PowerPoint right off the bat, or Keynote, whatever your presentation tool of choice is, get comfortable with your slide sorter, because you can lay out some big ideas on slides and then begin to move those around easily versus kind of the linear approach. So.
Right. I really like this page in the book where he shows some basic introductory slides to concepts, and then he leaves room for additional slides in the slide sorter. So he's kind of mapping out the whole presentation, but leaving room to expand on the ideas that he wants to share.
Yep. And then finally, I guess the big idea here is, with this particular section, is show restraint. Don't try and jam everything in there. Spend enough time with the material where you can distill it down into the big ideas, and then put the rest in a handout, or put different things that you need to go through, you know, in your speaker notes. So it's a matter of trying to keep that screen as clean and as compelling as possible, and get all the other stuff out of there. So that, you know, the students can, you know, look at it later or consider it, you know, in a maybe different way.
The mantra I jotted down was, when in doubt, cut it out. So,
yes.
Yeah, keep it simple. I'm reminded of a writing exercise I went through once where I just took kind of a lengthy sentence and condensed it and condensed it and condensed it and tried to convey the same information in half the number of words that were used originally. And the same concept applies here. Keep it simple and focused on the goal.
Yep, absolutely. We've got a number of resources that we'll share, and we don't need to take the time to kind of go through each one of those. But I'm going to post a what I call presentation best practices slide or screencast that I share with the students of the MLC class that I teach. And that goes through a lot of these topics. So that'll be one resource that we post up there that you may want to listen through.
Absolutely. And we have done a past podcast on digital storytelling. And so kind of ties in as well. We were kind of education focused in that podcast and tool focused, but same concepts that we're talking about here for presentations.
Yep. And one kind of final resource that might be worth considering, especially if you do a lot of presentations, is another book, kind of a what I almost call a companion volume, not by Gar Reynolds, but by Nancy Duarte, called Slideology, which really more focuses on the design rather than the theory behind presentations, although she gets into that a little bit. Slideology, the art and science of creating great presentations. That's, again, on Amazon. It's a nicely done book. And, again, if you do a lot of presentations, probably something worth looking at.
Excellent. So go out there and plan, and keep it simple, folks.
Very good. And if you'd like to follow along, it's still not too late. Grab the book presentation, Zen by Gar Reynolds. It's in ebook form. It's in paperback or a paper form, fairly reasonable. And we'll be looking at chapter 5 next month, first month of 2013.
Be here before you know it, huh?
Yep. So should we move on to what, ministry resources next, Sally?
Yes, I think it's worth making mention of a website we've talked about several times on the show. It's called freebibleimages.org. And in particular, they have images related to the Christmas story. An angel visits Joseph. There's a whole series of images on that. The wise men worship. An angel visits Mary. Mary visits Elizabeth. Each one of these unlocks a series of images. And the neat thing about this website is that they're downloadable and reusable for whatever your ministry purposes are. So completely free and very high quality photography included for you to make use of. So some beautiful imagery of the Christmas story. Perhaps you want to do a slideshow or make use of them for your website or whatever it may be.
Yeah, check they are out. Nicely done. Yeah. Free Bible Images, is it .org?
.org, yes. It is. Yes, sir.
Freebibleimages.org. Super. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Let's move on to news and tech. Couple items here. One of them is one of our favorite tools, Dropbox. Sal, you want to share the news there?
Yeah, Dropbox has made it simple and fast to share files. In the past, when you did file sharing with Dropbox, the recipient had to have a Dropbox account as well. So you shared a file, they would log into their Dropbox account and the files would show up in a sharing area on their account. But that is no longer the case. Our friends at Dropbox have made it easier to share. People do not have to have a Dropbox account to make use of the items that you're sharing. And you can also link to a whole folder of files instead of a just a specific file. I know in the past I used to have to create a zip file with all the files I wanted to share if there were multiple files, and then I would give them a link to the zip file to download. Right. Well, that's no longer the case. Now you can give them a link to a folder. They can open the folder and see the files within it and pick and choose if they want to just download a few or whatever. Mm-hmm. So some great improvements from Dropbox.
And I think this is probably a result of the announcement from Google that I think we maybe mentioned last week or the week before, where they're having these large file attachments. Through Google Drive through Google Drive. So this is Dropbox response. So good for us.
Yeah, definitely.
Another piece of news that came out, speaking of Google, is that the popular Google Apps functionality or program or service that they make available that allows for kind of a domain-specific set of Google Docs and Gmail and calendaring, kind of a office suite, if you will, is no longer going to be free. And Tom Rosenow shared this with us via, was it Digo? I forget how he shared
that's
that.
That's right.
And it was a Lifehacker article, and the title of the article is, "What Should I Do Now That Google Apps Accounts Are No Longer Free?" Well, I guess the good news for nonprofits is that the one for nonprofits and schools is still free. You do have to apply for that and provide proof that you are a nonprofit or a school. So that's the good news. But if you have, let's say you're using this for personal use or for your small business or whatever, you are going to have to pay, I believe it is, I want to say $50 a year per user. So it's still not a bad deal, but there are other things out there. And this Lifehacker article talks about maybe using something like Zoho, or Microsoft also has an Office Web Apps application, talks about using Dropbox. There's a few other potential solutions that you could use here. So just be aware that any Google Apps account going forward will be charged. If you already have one, you're grandfathered in. You will not be charged anything if you already have one. So that's the good news.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that, Tom.
Yep. I appreciate that, too. And that will lead us right into our picks of the week. Sally, what is your pick this week?
My pick this week is a site called morgfile.com. And no, I'm not being depressed, Till, or anything like that. But Morgfile is a place to find great imagery, and it's totally free. They have a link here why they call it Morgfile. A Morgfile is a place to keep post-production materials. It's used a lot in the newspaper business. That's a term that they use. So they consider this the Morgfile of the internet, a place to keep great imagery, and it's available for free. Their license is pretty straightforward. If we take a look at a particular photo here, and you can do searches and come up with whatever photos you're looking for. But if we open one up, then you can see it says you're allowed to copy, distribute, transmit the work, and adapt the work. Attribution is not required. You are prohibited from using this work in a standalone manner. So if you
now, that's Creative Commons language, isn't it? Or is it their own?
It is their own. It's okay. Actually a Morgfile language. And you don't have to have any attribution. In Creative Commons, you typically do have
to. Well, you have a choice. Right, you have a choice. There's a there's like seven different selections with Creative Commons. I was kind of fooled because they use that, that circle. Because Creative Commons uses that same kind of logo with a C in the middle. So
CC, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did notice that they have a link at the top called Classroom, and this is just a little bit of Langyaf, a little something extra for you. They have some really high-quality lessons on photography here.
Cool.
And so very detailed step-by-step lessons. It's all done with written text and imagery, but quite a bit of good information. There's that, what's that called? A golden spiral or something
golden
like that?
Spiral, right.
Yeah. So they've got some great stuff that they share. If you're looking for some basic photography courses, check out their Classroom page. So all kinds of goodies over at Morgfile, and you'll want to make use of these in all your great presentations where you're picking just the correct imagery to go along with the message you're delivering.
Yeah, that's one of the questions I get a lot when I'm teaching is, you know, where do you find good photography? And this is just one. I mean, you've already given two examples, actually, with your ministry resource as well. Mm-hmm. But this is another example of great free stuff, and you don't have to even attribute it. So if you can find it there, just go ahead and use it. So very cool. Okay, Morgfile. My pick of the week is actually a, this is kind of an odd one, Sally, and I'm going to have to explain it. let me give you a little bit of introduction. I'm going to tell a story. Okay. when I take my iPad to a meeting, I'm always challenged to find a notes app. Now, the iPad has its own notes app, which you can use, which works fine with the keyboard. The challenge that I have with that kind of approach is that the notes are kind of locked in to the iPad. I mean, you can sync them, and then it goes to iCloud, and then you got to go to iCloud, or you got to go to iTunes to get all your notes out if you want to put them on your computer. So I was looking for a better solution that actually used Dropbox. Because you can get Dropbox on the iPad. You can get Dropbox, obviously, on your computer. Something where you could create a file there, and then it would automatically sync. I wouldn't have to do anything. And there aren't that many applications that will do that, that'll save right to Dropbox in a text, you know, kind of a text file. One that I found, and this really isn't my pick. It's kind of a maybe a sidecar pick. It's called Elements on iPad. So I was very intrigued. It's not a free program. It's like $4.99, but it's really simple, works really well, works right in Dropbox. That's the place it saves it, and it saves right to my computer. But what Elements does is it uses a language called Markdown. Markdown has been around for a little while now. It was created by John Gruber at daringfireball.com, who's a Mac enthusiast. And Markdown is simply a simplified language, quote-unquote language, simpler than HTML. So HTML, you know, if you look at HTML code, it's got strong tags and your brackets and, you know, all kinds of things that you kind of have to know if you're going to write HTML. Even if you're doing blogging kinds of things, you have to know a little bit about HTML. Markdown makes it a little bit simpler. For those of you watching, I can quickly share my screen here, but I'll talk through this for those of you that are just listening. So let me pull up the right link here. The there is a whole markdown site that that John Gruber has put together at Daring Fireball. It's daringfireballs.net/project/markdown. And he gives a little introduction here, and it's made primarily for the Mac, but it's available on all platforms at this point. So let me give you a quick demonstration. He's got this little tool here that allows you to practice your markdown. Mm-hmm. And let me actually share my screen here. There we go. And so Markdown is simply a quick language. So if you wanted, let's say, and it works off of the HTML approach. So if you wanted to do, let's say, a title tag or a heading one or heading two, you just use a simple hashtag. So this is heading. I'm going to type a hashtag and then some text after it. And then you have a little convert button on his site where it'll show, it'll actually show the resulting HTML. So it converts what you're writing into HTML, which is great for like WordPress or things like that, if you want to just basically take quick notes. And the whole concept behind Markdown is that you don't have to use your mouse or on the iPad, use your finger to touch the screen to do any bolding. You can do it right within the Markdown itself. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to do bold, you would just use the you would just use a star tag, and then just keep typing away. And if you wanted to do, and you can see that it converts it and adds the you know, the bold tag. Same with, let's say, lists. So if you wanted to create a list, list item one, so you put the number one, period, space, and then your list item, and the number two, period, space, and a list item. And then what it does is it converts it into the HTML necessary to create that list. So it's just a real quick, easy way to both either take notes or write quick HTML that you can publish into, you know, a blog post real easily. This is really popular with people who do a lot of blog writing or do a lot of writing itself, where they're not distracted by all the things that you can do in an editor, in a notes editor, you know, the blog or the bolds, the italics, the underlines, the colored fonts, and those kinds of things, most of which you can do with this Markdown language. Now, it takes maybe an hour or two using the tool to get used to the syntax necessary. So if you wanted to do like a heading style too, it's two hashtags. So it's very logical in its approach. And then once you're done with that, then the whole process becomes very second nature to you. And you really don't need to know HTML at all. It does it all for you. You can do links. You can do anchor tags. You can do all the kind of the basic things with HTML with just very simple, no mouse necessary, no bracket necessary approaches in it. Again, called Markdown. There's lots of tools on there. If you go to his site, he gives you some of the syntax. So if you want to do italics, you've got the approaches there. If you wanted to create a, you know, a horizontal line or lists or unordered lists, you know, those kinds of things, block quotes, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, and I got used to this real quick, and this is how I take notes now on the iPad, where I just type, and I'm done. Syncs to Dropbox. I can cut and paste it into, you know, my notes editor or into WordPress or whatever it is, and I'm basically done. So it's been a real productivity improvement for my workflow. So that's called Markdown.
Okay, I have questions.
Sure.
Questions from the class. So do you go to his website and just use it as you're demonstrating in the browser? Or are you saying that the Elements app on your iPad uses this interface?
The Elements app uses something similar.
Okay.
So you can start, you can just type and type, you know, using this syntax. Uh-huh. So, you know, the hashtags and the underscores, those kinds of things. And it will convert it automatically for you. So that when you actually open up the text file There are different apps that you can get on the Mac and the PC that'll do the conversion as well.
Okay.
So that's then I'll just cut and paste it. So there's, if you just do a quick search on Markdown apps, you know, for Mac or Windows, you can just open it up in that app and it does a conversion and then you just cut and paste it into, you know, whatever you want. So, or just leave it as is. It's real easy to read too, but it works well. Or you can cut and paste the Markdown into, let's say, an email and it will, through these apps, will convert it so that it looks nicer.
Excellent.
But it's just a good way to kind of type without, you know, worrying about a lot of the formatting or a lot of the bells and whistles that a lot of the text editors have, where you can just add them to yourself, add them yourself, and it works works pretty seamlessly.
So, excellent.
Little geeky pick.
Yes, but, it is.
It has really, I think, improved my note-taking ability just to be able to zip through that. And anybody that does a lot of coding will appreciate this too, where it's you don't really want to mess around with the mouse or a lot of the tools and, you know, the wizards that are available.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I could just learn to type well, I'd be in good shape.
That is a prerequisite. I don't have a tip for that, although there's lots of typing tutors out there.
Yeah, I just have this dyslexia of the fingers things going on. So.
Now, are you, you're a touch typist, I assume, right?
Yeah, kind of. Okay. I wouldn't put a lot of stock in that, but yeah.
Anybody that it is in art that does a lot of the computer work that we do, you know, you almost have to. But I've seen a lot of two-finger typers, too, that would just drive me nuts.
Yeah.
I think the iPad and tablets in general have maybe promoted that, too, where if you're using the virtual keyboard, you almost have to two-finger type. You know, I mean, there's no sense for where you are on the keyboard. So that's one thing that drives me crazy. And that's one reason that I always carry a physical keyboard now. I think that was one of my picks a couple weeks ago, where without that, I would really struggle to use the virtual keyboard.
Sure.
So should we move along to community? You have more questions.
No, I'm good. I think we should move along because we have a lot of great community feedback this week. So
fire
I'm going to share my screen and zip through a whole bunch of great links. Actually, several of them I posted on Digo because I thought everyone would enjoy and benefit from them, starting with this article from the Internet Toolbox for Churches, where they talk about a critical church website security tip. And this is probably true a lot about WordPress sites, but other sites in general. When you do the setup of sites, they give you a default administrator name. Typically, the word admin
yes.
is used for the login. And I never really thought about the username being something that is part of the security settings as well. So you can see that it's not as privatized as a password typically is. But someone who wants to hack your site needs both. And so what they're recommending is that you don't go with the default username for your administrator account, that you don't go with admin or webmaster or whatever the default name is that comes up when you're installing software, that you choose a different username. And I just thought that was a different twist on
security. That's a great idea. Yeah.
And appreciated that.
You really get two-factor security that way. If you're if you're changing your username, you know, on a fairly regular basis or have some formula for that, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I personally don't do that, but I think I'm going to start doing that. I think that's a great approach.
Yeah, it kind of caught me too. That's why I thought it was worth mentioning.
So. The only time I change up my username, if it's already taken, you know, on the site and I can't use the one that I normally use, or if they require, you know, a certain, you know, some sites require actually certain numbers of characters or, you know, certain kinds of characters. So.
Yep. All right, next up, I stumbled across an article from a website called Church Juice, and they were linking to a PDF. It's a free download called Facebook for Churches, and I was quite impressed with this. They walk you right through features and administration tools. They explain the differences between pages versus groups and different ways that you can make use of it. They explain the timeline and how to add events to the timeline. It's about a 30-page document and very well done, I think. They give you examples of good images for the header of your timeline. And all of this is from actual church Facebook pages, not just, you know, individual pages or whatever. It's very church centric. They talk about your audience and the kind of information that your audience might be interested in. A quick read, like I said, only about a 30-page document, but I think it's very well done. And was kind of intrigued by the Church Juice website in general. I hadn't heard of that one. That wasn't one that was in my blog reader and one that I was actively following. So I added it there. And when I did, I got a whole bunch of historic blog posts to kind of work my way through. And one that I thought was really intriguing, it was from October of this year. It's called The Art of Web Design. And it's really not church centric, so kind of shifting gears a little, but they found a PBS series called Off Book. And in this PBS video series, they talk about different arts and artists and things like that. And they spent one show talking about the art of web design. And some of the main points they pulled out were good websites have a purpose. We build websites to serve people and fill a need in their lives. Study your website to see if it's working and don't be afraid to make tweaks. So just some good, useful tips. And I found the video really intriguing. It's about 7 minutes long and thought that others might enjoy it as well as enjoy the churchjuice.com blog and reading through it as I am currently doing.
Great.
All right. Next up was a tip from my friend Richard Byrne at Free Technology for Teachers. And this was a way to unlock stock imagery on your Google Drive account. So if you're doing a presentation or a document, whatever it may be, and you need to include some imagery, if you go to the insert command, there's an image link. And on that image link, if you choose to search, you're going to now find a link that says stock images. This is something new that Google's recently added, and you can actually search for stock imagery that you can use. And it says results are labeled for commercial reuse with modification. So basically, you can do anything you want with this imagery. And so here's yet another image source for you if you're a Google Drive user and maybe a Google Apps user.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Long overdue. That's really helpful. I have to make a note of that for my class because that's a great resource.
Definitely. Another one that I read about was called Shepherd Software. And this is one I just want to add for my little elementary kids because we're always looking for great online games for them to use during computer time that are actually educational and not just a waste of their time. Right. And I love it that they have a whole category of preschool and kindergarten because those early readers or non-readers are really challenging and you want to give them a good way to spend their time on the computer. So if you're a teacher, I'm going to be adding this to my arsenal of available websites for my elementary age students. It's called shepherdsoftware.com.
And these are all online types of resources? Online
exactly. Games? Yeah. Okay. Just probably flash based. I'm not really sure. So,
Okay. All right.
Also via Digo, we heard from Jason Schmidt. He sent us a link to easydefine.com where you can enter a whole list of words and get definitions very quickly for multiple words. He also sent us a link to vocabahead.com and a great resource if you're preparing for ACT or SAT and want to build up your vocabulary skills. So two links from Jason Schmidt. Martin, you had a couple of links to share as well.
I do. One was shared by my brother-in-law, Dan Witte, Pastor Dan Witte at Risen Savior in Florida. And let's see if I can bring this up. It was an article called Death and Life and Your Tongue. This is by a Christian author. I don't know if I can actually pronounce the name correctly, chalice.com, C-H-A-L-L-I-E-S. He's got a number of topics that he writes about. This one happens to be one on Christian living, and it was shared with me, I think, because of the subject matter, which was how to, well, the article begins, just about every blogger can identify with frustration. You write an article that is kind and well-reasoned and, at least in your estimation, displays the fruit of the Spirit's work in your life. You know, with some excitement, you share it, and then basically the end of the paragraph says, well, bloggers have rightly been criticized for being too negative at times. Blog commenters can be equally ruthless. So it's about the tone that happens online and how that is sometimes different than, let's say, in person. And he talks about some of the reasons for that, the anonymity, the dehumanization, you know, that just being online sometimes introduces into the equation, and how a Christian ought to think about that and deal with that. He references, obviously, some Bible passages that have made a difference to him, as he's a Christian writer and, as I'm sure, has experienced some of the things that he's writing about. So just some good advice for a Christian who is living online and how to deal with other people as they, and this can, I think, apply to even email, Sally, as sometimes it's things are lost in translation and it's easy to kind of get a little snippy maybe, or a little bit maybe more unevangelical, if that's a word, than maybe you'd like to be. With just a quick keyboard press versus just kind of thinking through how you might respond. So it's a good article that kind of calls us on the carpet a little bit about how we live our lives online and how we respond.
The words of the Catechism ring true. Take their words and actions in the kindest possible way. And
exactly.
We don't always do that, unfortunately, especially when we're not face-to-face. That virtual is just too easy to misinterpret.
Yep, absolutely.
So we also heard from listener Rachel Arnold over on our Facebook page, Martin. She's enjoying our shows and looking forward to.
Well, she wants to. We announced last week. Was it last week, Sally?
We're
doing our seven best. We're actually extending the very popular Seven Best series to our seven best picks of the year. So we're going to do that in our, the first
New
show?
New Year's Day show.
Yeah, the first show of 2013. And Rachel was wondering, well, why don't we, she really enjoyed the seven, she would really enjoy our seven worst. And Sally's shaking her head, and we, you know, longtime listeners will probably know why. And Sally would prefer just to kind of take the high road, I think, with our seven best, right?
Well, it's been our tradition to kick off the new year, our New Year's Eve celebration or whatever, to count down best and worst picks of the year. And we've done that for 4 years of Wells Tech. Here we are, made it to our fifth anniversary. And every year I've pleaded, I really don't like picking my worst picks. I don't want to offend anybody. And apparently one year I accidentally did, and there was a little controversy there. And so this year I said to Martin, instead of doing three worst and three best picks, let's just go for seven best. Let's just take the high road, as you said. And he actually agreed. Year after year, I've asked this, and he was agreeable. And what did Rachel do but turn around and say, I'm looking forward to your worst picks? I had to laugh when I read that.
So sorry, Rachel. Maybe we'll do that privately, but probably not on the show.
Yay.
We want to keep the talent happy. And so
I'm difficult.
actually, that whole worst pick story actually turned out pretty well, because we actually had the one of the people involved on the show, and we got to talk about some cool stuff. So.
And how wrong I really was. So.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. I have my Wells Tech Pinterest page up on my screen, because there are some pins that I wanted to share, a couple of interesting infographics, the seven habits of highly effective teachers who use technology, including they always start with the why, they embrace change, they're extremely thorough and think two steps ahead, and they actively care. I thought this was a really good read, and maybe a help to some teachers who are trying to bring their staff along into the tech ed world. And Just a nice infographic, well put together.
And they use one of my favorite words there in number two, malleable. They mm-hmm. are malleable and can easily adapt. And that's kind of what technology forces you to do. It, you need to be flexible and moldable and malleable. So
definitely.
Cool. I like the infographic.
And then one more infographic. This is from my friends over at Edudemic, a great ed tech blog. And they shared, is the internet bad for your health? The potential risk of spending too much time online. And they walked through how it can turn into brain damage and mood disorders and affect your body with eye strain and bad posture and affect our lives with sleep deprivation and stress. So some good food for thought, good for parents who want to help their children develop good habits, and for those of us that are a little bit older and hunched over our keyboards a little too much, maybe some good food for thought for us as well. So check out the infographics on our wonderful Wells Tech Pinterest page.
Can you say that again, Sally? I missed that.
Yeah. You like it. Yeah. You got some stuff on there too. So
now I know what's wrong with me. That infographic really highlights it.
All right. Listener Ryan Rosenthal at Faith in Fond du Lac wanted to make sure that we knew how much he was loving TeamViewer.
Viewer, yeah.
The fact that you can remote control any computer. It does take a software download, but once you have it installed, the user just has to have their computer on and TeamViewer running. They don't even have to be there, and you can log into their computer and, you know, do different support. I know Ryan uses it to access his school computer from home, and he's written to us in the past about being able to set things up for a substitute when he didn't know one was going to be there, and, you know, he has to do some last-minute prep from home in order to support a substitute. So TeamViewer is great. They just came out with a brand new version, and we'll have a link in our show notes. Ryan also mentioned that he appreciates, Martin, that we make it easy for the audio-only listeners to continue to enjoy Wells Tech, that we're not all about what we're sharing on the screen. So we're working on
that,
Ryan.
Right. We have to be reminded, and we do, because most of our people are listeners mm-hmm. rather than viewers. I think the statistics would bear that out. So my daughter reminds me of that, too, as she mm-hmm. listens to us on her walk to work each week. So, and also about the length, because she's only got a half hour each way, and she wants to do a whole episode in one day. So if we exceed an hour, then I get it, then I hear it as well.
Gotta cut it off.
Yeah,
we better get on
and
that.
We're beyond that today, I think.
Yeah,
we're almost done here, folks. I had a couple things that I wanted to share that I ran across. One of them was an article, a blog post on Church Mag, which we've talked about in the past. Good resource for those people in technology and in the church. One of them was, "Are Mobile Phones the New Frontier for Churches?" Great article that talks through kind of the advent of the mobile church, so to speak, and a number of the things that you're going to want to think about as you consider your mobile strategy. Most churches don't have a mobile strategy. So I think that's one of the points of the articles. And then a lot of the tools that are available. So this is something that you'll want to, it's a quick read, and it gives you an idea of maybe some things to think about as you're thinking about your mobile approaches to your content. And then the last thing I wanted to share was, again, from one of our favorite websites, Free Technology for Teachers. This was a post from yesterday, 22 useful Google Forms for teachers and principals. So this is a great resource for anybody who uses Google. And one of the neat things about Google's documents is that you can create these forms. And when you create the forms, the results can go right into a spreadsheet, and you have very usable data. So there's a link in here that talks about a lot of tests and quizzes, administrative forms, storyboards, book list templates, vocabulary flashcard builders, auto email forms, observation records, mileage trackers, discipline forms, just a lot of quizzes and those kinds of things. So take a look at that blog post and check out some of those forms. No need to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of good stuff out here, and teachers are good about sharing. So why not take advantage of that?
Excellent. I think that will wrap up our community feedback for this week.
Very good. What's going on next week?
Next week, we are counting down great moments in ministry tech history. So it's going to be a history class, and we're just going to look back at some of the things we feel like have affected some of the technology things we feel like have had a positive impact on ministry, and how we can use them today, and how they've evolved over the short history and of our digital lives in the past maybe 20 years or so. Should be interesting.
Yeah, not just general technology things, but obviously ministry technology things mm-hmm. that have made a difference for us and, our work in the church and school. So we'll also be sharing an interview with our new hymnal director who recently accepted a call and now is on the job, Reverend Michael Schultz from Georgia. And a great interview about his thoughts on the new hymnal, even though that's quite a ways in the future. He's already begun thinking about how technology is going to influence maybe that work. So you'll want to tune in next week for our interview with Mike.
Yeah, it got me really excited about the new hymnal project. So I think you guys will enjoy it.
Yep. Let's close the show, Sally, with some Advent music. One of my favorites, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel by Joey Schumann. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up to David a righteous branch, a king who will reign wisely and do what is just and right in the land. In his days Judah will be saved, and Israel will live in safety. This is the name by which he will be called, the Lord our righteousness. Jeremiah 23:5-6. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and will call him Emmanuel. Isaiah 7, verse 14. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. Isaiah 9, verses 6 and 7.